jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 17 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined by Dunny. Welcome back, mate.
Thanks, Marcus. Great to be back.
And Faz, welcome back too, mate.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
I think the last time we were on the show, we were the glamorous trio of the podcast guests. And hopefully we've kept up the good results. So let's spin around for a personal update. Dunny, do you want to kick us off?
This week, I managed to have one less player than I should have because I held Maxi Gawn, so I copped a donut there. It was a bit strategic, but I was quite happy with my score of 23-13, even though I copped that. I took the Brodie Grundy VC score, which was great, and very happy to see James Sicily hit a bit of form. I also had Travis Boak, but thankfully Jared Cameron from the Eagles came up with an 84 off the bench for me, so I was very happy with that. So, sitting just outside 7,000 in the ranking, I think 7,074. So given the way my season's gone and recent seasons, I'm actually reasonably happy with that at the moment. How about you, Faz? How'd you go?
Yeah, I was pretty happy with this week's result. I also copped the donut from Max Gawn and still cobbled together a score of 24-18. So that's a lot better than my team does normally with 22 players. So definitely take that off 21. And unfortunately, I actually had the option to avoid the donut had I known about Gawn being out early enough. I could have pivoted West off into my ruck line and had Cameron with his 84 to come on field. But alas, I didn't discover that Gawn was going to be out until Sunday. So that was a bit of a bummer, but some really good performances across the board. New recruits to the team, Jack Zeeble and Bontempelli. Lockie Neal in as captain, so got the 6 points over Grundy there. Pretty happy with that. And only 4 trades left. But, caution is for chumps, as I like to say. Marcus, how are you traveling?
Faz, you had the biggest score for the week. So congrats to you. It would have been huge if you had Cameron on as well. 23-28 for me. So about 100 points behind. Still enough to move me up about 1,000 spots, 8,200th. So sandwiched between the two of you rank-wise. The main highlight for the week was Lockie Neal scoring 151 as the captain, especially because I didn't go with Grundy and recommended against Grundy against McAvoy last week. He scored 145 and having to wait until Sunday to hope that Neal went better and then to have Neal actually deliver more points was definitely a highlight after recommending him as a top captaincy option in last week's podcast. All right. In terms of a quick public group update, Michael's team break a leg, move from 19th to 8th. So we continue to follow him closely. And in terms of a Patreon group update, Matthew's team, the best 22, moved in from 80th to 36th to be the leader of our $250 group prize. He scored 25-32 for the week, which is actually huge. And that bested our former top score, which was Darren's Aussie Divers Phuket. He scored 25-27 in round 3, and it's taken until round 16 for somebody to beat that score for the $100 group prize for top scorer for the year. Unfortunately, though, Matthew didn't take out that award for the week. There were actually 4 people that beat that 25-27 top score that Darren previously set. And that was the Fernie Vinces with 25-35, Jaeger Bomb with 25-42. And the one that's topped them all and is now sitting with the top score for the year is Chris's Lunny's Legends. He scored 25-46 for the week. So huge scores. And he's now the front runner for that $100 prize. And I think there'll be a pretty heavy competition for that over the last few rounds that we're all running with finished teams. So looking forward to that tussle continuing. All right, let's get on to some questions, and we'll start with a question around an injury this week, and this one's from @JibRangers from Twitter, and he's asking about the best replacement for Josh Kelly. Now, very frustrating for anybody that brought him on because you would have paid a fairly heavy price tag for him. I know because I traded him in over McRae, and I'm bloody annoyed right now. I know a lot of people on the sidelines are very, very happy without Josh Kelly and saying he was always going to get injured, and fair points. But when you recognize the risk, take the risk, it still bloody hurts when it knifes you in the front. So it seems like Kelly's done a bit of a calf strain. Faz, do you have any more news on that?
There seemed to be a conjecture on Twitter. I was trying to get to the bottom of it last night. Some were saying calf strain. Others were saying a bit of a knock to the bone down the lower leg there. So still a bit up in the air. But as we've seen with a few other injuries out of the Giants this year, I think it's a bit of a bad sign when one of the rolled gold players at GWS gets a knock like that. It could be one of those listed on the injury list as a, you know, either a test or a 1 week injury, and just be a bit worried with Leon Cameron's previous form. This stretches out to be a 2 or 3 weeker. Dunny, do you know any more than I do?
No, I was watching the game, and when I saw him come off and put the ice pack on his calf, I could not believe it. I brought him in, but thankfully a few weeks earlier, so I have had a few points from him. I brought him in I brought him in around about round 12, round 13. I can't remember whether it was before or after. But yeah, I haven't heard anything more than that at the moment. I'm just praying that he comes up and only misses maybe one at the most.
Yeah, I'm hoping the fact that there's conjecture and a little bit of question marks in the air means that it is a short-termer, a really, really short-termer. And hopefully even if he misses, it's one. Or two at max. I think if he's only missing one or two games, that's probably enough still to hold on to him. What do you gents think about that? What's the boundary at which you would look to trade him out? Is 3 weeks the minimum, or would you trade him out if he's missing this week even?
I don't think I'd go the 1 week. I think you can deal with your coverage. I know that most teams are probably looking pretty slim at this point of year. Dylan Clark, Nick Hind, Jackson Hatley are sort of all pretty common names across teams, but we've also seen Bewley and Baker dropped last week. So if you can cobble together the bench coverage to get you through 1 week and you're confident it's just a 1 week injury, I'd probably hold anything longer, though I'd be pretty tempted to trade. We're at 7 weeks to go right now, so it's starting to be a pretty big chunk of the season remaining already. If it's a 2 week injury, that's more than 25% of the games we've got left.
Yeah, I agree with you there, mate. I think the good thing is that he actually went on to finish the game off. Didn't finish the game off. He scored 100 or so out of the game. So it's not like he went off with like a 20 or a 30 early on. So he didn't lose too much in value, which means that you can pretty much straight swap him for another premium. So, you know, if you've got enough trades left, then I don't see a problem with side swapping him. I'll probably hold him for the one. Hopefully I can bring Paddy Cripps back on the field for him. But if it's two or more, I think I'd be looking to trade him out.
I think one, keep; three, definite trade out; two, I would say maybe depending on how many trades you have. I think if you have five or fewer trades, you'd be more inclined to hold, I think. And of course, that's assuming that you have a pretty close to finish team. I think if you've got rookies still left on field, between trading out that rookie and upgrading him to a true premium, or trading out Josh Kelly for a couple of weeks, I think I would still continue on the upgrade path. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agree with that.
Let's say he's out for 3+, because we're recording this on a Monday night and we're still dealing with hypotheticals a little bit. Can we have a bit of a stab at the top 8 mids for the rest of the season? We had a go at the top 6 forwards last week. So if we do the mids this week, then maybe we'll have a bit of a crack at the back line next week as well. Seeing as we're headed in for the last 7 rounds of the year. I've put a little bit of an initial list together preparing for the show. And this is coming sort of last minute to you guys. So I will have a bit of a crack first, and then you guys can amend as required. So I've gone pretty close to the actual top 8 averaging list for the year so far, and I'm assuming that everyone's injury-free when I run through the list. So Neil, McRae, Kelly, Cripps, and Fife, I think, to me, are the clear top 5. After that, I've got Bontempelli at 6th, and on averages, I think he's also 6th. Annoyed I didn't trade him in over Sloan now. 7th, I've got actually Clayton Oliver. He started the year off pretty quietly, but he did manage 115 plus last season. And the second half of the year has been going pretty darn well for, I think he's had only one score under the ton in his last 8 games. And most of them were 110 plus. So he's definitely coming home with a wet sail. That second half of the season includes a 175 and a 158, albeit against Gold Coast and Carlton. But yeah, I'd look to him to finish out the year in the top eight form. And then Rory Sloane as well. I think you take away the game that he was injured for and his average still looks very, very good. So if he can return to some of that high scoring form, I think he should comfortably finish in that top eight as well. Who wants to go next?
I'll jump in there if you like, mate. And I'll kick off with the guy you finished with there, just Rory Sloane. If you look at the Crows' run to the finish of the season, they finished with Gold Coast this week, then Essendon at home, Carlton, St Kilda, West Coast away, Collingwood at home, and then the Bulldogs. So that's a pretty good run for Rory Sloane. I can't see him averaging less than probably 110 at least on that run home. So he'd have to be in the mix. I liked most of your list, X. I've got most of them, which was great. The Bont has certainly fired up in the back in the last few weeks. I reckon it was that game against Port on, and I must have kicked him on. That really annoyed me. But he's been really good. Josh Kennedy's another one to look for. He's coming back from his injury recently, and he's been scoring reasonably well. Had 118 on the weekend, albeit against Carlton. But he's another one that I'd certainly look at.
Just something to note on Kennedy that you brought up, Dunny. He's also cheap this week. He's 514,000. So for anyone looking at a cheaper upgrade or side swap, if you're looking to funnel that downgrade cash from Kelly into fixing another position on field, Josh Kennedy unlocks close to 100K for you, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, and they do have Carlton this week, then Fremantle the following week. Then a bit of a tough run with Geelong, GWS and Port away, but they finished the last 2 weeks with Melbourne and St Kilda at home. So could be a good option.
Yeah, I think you boys have done a pretty good job of covering the field there. Maybe just to pick up on a couple of the guys that are currently sitting in the top eight that we didn't mention, and the two names that spring to mind there are Luke Parker and Ben Cunnington. I think I'm probably okay with the list that you've put together, though. Luke Parker to me is one that sort of snuck under the radar. I know that I think I sorted players by price last week and was a bit shocked to see Luke Parker sitting up there, you know, with the Max Gorns and Brody Grundys. I think that Josh Kennedy coming back into the team will probably impact that. And despite the good run that you pointed out there, Dunny, I think if I was going to go Sydney mid, I'd probably stick to Josh Kennedy, take the value and put the 100 grand to use elsewhere. Ben Cunnington's one that definitely flies under the radar, just sort of doesn't do anything too flashy, but keeps racking up the inside ball. I did see an article on the AFL website tonight. I think he's sort of a minor indiscretion away from a suspension based on some not very frequently used tribunal rules. So that might be one reason to stay clear of Cunnington. He's also at the 550 mark, so not a whole lot of value, I guess, at that price. And I might be looking at Rory Sloane. You save only 5,000, but I think Rory Sloane with a strong run home is probably a player I'd look to target over the top of Cunnington. So I think overall, no drastic changes to the top eight that you two have identified.
And I guess if you're looking for value, just going to chuck a couple of names that we haven't quite covered so far that might tempt some of our listeners. One's fairly highly selected, being Matt Crouch. Matt Crouch is only 505K, which is, I reckon, absolute peanuts for what he can deliver. His 54 that he scored against Port Adelaide in round 8 stayed in his price cycle until round 13 because he missed a bunch of games. And then round 15 against Geelong, he scored 109. And then round 16 against Port, he scored 107. And you'd argue that those are pretty tough opposition. But because he only scored in the hundreds and his price already went down after the 50, he's actually stayed pretty cheap in price. But 505K for a bloke that outside of that injury affected 54, his next lowest score is 90 is really, really good. So if you're looking for a trade option for Kelly this week and wanting to save some cash, Matt Crouch has been a bit forgotten, but surely holds some pretty good value. And as Dunny mentioned, the run home for Adelaide, he gets the benefit from that as well. How about Zaki Merritt, Faz? For non-owners, they'd be licking their lips after that injury affected 59 that you mentioned before. But if you're looking for a trade option this week, he did drop, you know, 35 grand off just the 1 week. Would you consider potentially just biting the bullet and trading him to this week if Josh Kelly is out?
I think so. I think you probably can't afford at this point in the season to be waiting the extra week to get the additional discount that you're going to get. He's got a break even of 163, so there is further for his price to fall. But I've been pretty happy with Zach. I've been an owner all season, and he does have that capacity to score pretty big as well. He's not the most consistent scorer in terms of that there are a few sort of 80s and 90s amongst the score list, but he's also got 138, 129, a 137, a 155 in there. So he can go big.
One of our patrons, Hanif, asked us about Merritt and Duncan and comparing the two. They're both set to drop a fair bit in price and will both be less than 500K fairly shortly. But just in terms of evaluating the two of them, not just in future weeks, but for this week as well, be interested to get your thoughts, Dunny. So Duncan's had a fairly similar scoreline to Merritt. He's averaged close to 110 for most of the season. He only had four games under the 100 as well, and they were all above 80. His one poor game just came against the Dogs on the weekend, scoring a 58. Prior to that, he was averaging 109 for the season, and he has averaged 110 previously. So it almost looks like the same mold as Zachy Merritt does. So how would you compare the two of them, Dunny? Who do you like better?
If I had to pick between the two, I think I would probably go Mitch Duncan. One of the main reasons for that is that he's not going to be your first tag target for Geelong. That's going to go to – it seems to be going to Tim Kelly most of the time these days because the other teams see him as a lot more damaging with ball in hand. So the other part of that, I guess, is that Duncan's in a team that, apart from the weekend, should be winning, you know, pretty much every game on the way home with the Saints, Hawks, Swans, Freo, North, Brisbane and Carlton.
It's a pretty good draw. Come.
It's a very good draw. The only one I probably don't like there for them is probably Brisbane at the Gabba.
Yeah.
That'll be pretty tough. But other than that, that's a really good run home. Yeah, you've got guys like Dangerfield, Kelly, who are going to take the attention of the opposition away. Whereas at Essendon, you know, Zach Merritt is in first, if not in the top two, who's going to get that attention. So if I had to pick between the two, given everything else being as equal as it is, I'll be going Mitch Duncan on that one, I think. Faz, do you agree with that one, being a Bombers man?
I don't love to do this, but I think you're right there, Donny. I think Mitchie might be the right call.
Sweet. Well, in putting my value picks together before the show, I had Matt Crouch 1, Merritt 2, Duncan 3. But looking at the upcoming fixture a little bit more closely, I think I will go with both your gents' point of view then and flip it and have Duncan ahead of Merritt. This question's from at Stadium Hammer. Seven trades left, and he's asking whether or not he should be finishing his side off or holding for injuries or holding for later in the season to burn the rest of his trades. And we got quite a few questions about trading, how many trades to use as we're reaching closer and closer to the end of the season. I think last week and the week before, we've talked a little bit about what to do in the league scenario, so I'm going to leave that behind. Basically, you try and hold a trade a week if you can for the finals. Apart from that, you're using as many trades as you can to get yourself to the final series. But for the overall stakes, let's just have a little bit of a recap for people who are seeking some direction on how quickly or how slowly to burn their trades for the run home. So, Faz, you mentioned you had four trades at the start of this show. So, clearly, you're comfortable continuing to burn beyond seven.
We'd be a bit hypocritical if I said that Stadium Hammer should hold his horses.
What do you think is the right amount? Are you stopping now that you have four trades left? Keeping in mind that after this week, after you make your trades this week, you only have six rounds left, right? So I guess how many trades would you want to have after this week?
I think that if I was in a situation where I had the resources to complete my final upgrade, which currently is Griffin Logue as my D6, I'd probably be pulling the trigger this week and leaving myself with three trades for the remaining 6 weeks. Donny, what's your approach to all this? Where are you sitting currently with trades?
Ideally, I'd like to head into finals for leagues with four to go, but if you're going for overall, I think if you went down to the three that you're talking about, Faz, I wouldn't want to go any further than that at this stage and sort of ration it out, sort of one trade every 2 weeks, unless you get a season-ending injury to someone, to one of your guns, and then you have to trade. Marcus, what are your thoughts, mate?
I used to go with the general rule, and I think it still holds today, that for each two remaining games left in the season, you want to hold one trade once you get down to the end of the year if you're going for the overall. After this round, I'd be happy to have three trades left to run out the year. If you have a very, 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 very light bench, I would want to keep four trades, so one buffer to allow for the fact that you have a terrible bench. So that would sort of be my boundaries. Outside of that, if you have not finished your team, I would upgrade aggressively to complete your team. If your team is already completed and you have mid prices left, even if you have trades left in bank, I probably wouldn't trade. So if you're looking at upgrading an 80-point defender to a 100-point defender, let's say, with seven rounds to go, that equates to 140 points that you might gain from that upgrade. Ideally, you'd like 150 plus to make a trade worthwhile. Earlier on in the season, you're actually looking at 200 points from a trade. So you're down to the point of the year where upgrading mid prices on field probably doesn't make a heap of sense, but you're still trying to get all the rookies off your field as soon as possible. Like if you're looking at Logue, like a few of us are on field, you're definitely trying to get them out. But apart from that, pretty happy to go as aggressively as you need so that you hold two trades left for the end of the year, plus one if you have a really weak bench. All right, next question is from at Nate Dogg on Twitter. He's got a full premium team except for a D5 and D6 where he's got Hoare and Logue. And we actually got a heap of questions about having still rookie D5s and D6s. And a few of them are asking, like, do I upgrade in that situation? Absolutely upgrade. As per before, go down to three and you're still okay. So absolutely, if you're in a scenario where you have two rookies still on field in the back line and Hoare starting to taper off, absolutely trade him out.
Oh, and Hoare's done as well for the year. Did his collarbone.
Even more so. Yeah, absolutely. Nate's actually asked as well, in addition to trading, should he choose the cheap Sicily or go with Shannon Hearn instead? And we also got, I think, at least five people asking us this question. So we'll spend a little bit of time on it. So Sicily at 437,000 offers absolute value, just scored 141 over the weekend compared to Shannon Hearn, a top two defender in the league. But priced at 532K, so at 100K more, still is about the cheapest he's been since the start of the season. So he offers some sort of value. I guess before we tackle the question like Hearn and Sicily as your final upgrade, let's first tackle the question Hearn and Sicily if it's your second last upgrade, right? So if you have Hoare and Logue and you're looking to trade Hoare to Sicily and Hearn, you still have Logue left in your team. In that situation, 100% Sicily. You want to try and take some value so that you can complete Logue to that final premium as quickly as you can. What do you reckon about that, Donny?
Absolutely, mate. I think this has been such a hard season to make money in. And as Faz mentioned a few minutes ago, there's not much coming through in terms of rookies that we can rely on. So the downgrade options just aren't around the place, apart from one or two that are coming through. But you've got to go Sicily in that situation to give yourself some cash to make that sixth upgrade.
Faz, how about if Hearn and Sicily was your final defensive upgrade or your final upgrade? In that situation, Hearn or Sicily? So in a vacuum, you're just picking for the highest scoring play on the run home. Is it a shoo-in that you pick Hearn in that case?
For me, it's not. I'm definitely one that leans on the side of sort of taking the value really until you're seeing that one trade left button there, and that's the trade you're making. Of course, at that point, you know, value means nothing, and you're just trying to pick whoever's going to score the most points. But a move like this one, if you're taking for your final upgrade, if you pick Sicily and leave yourself with 100K in the bank, say you're in my boots, and that leaves you three trades left for the rest of the year. What that means is that then, touch wood, Sicily goes down this week, or Luke Ryan, one of our less high-performing premiums, if they get injured early in the game and have a poorish score, and then you're forced to trade that player out because they're out for the remainder of the season, if you've still got a bit of cash sitting in the bank, that then gives you the flexibility to potentially still grab a guy that's around, you know, the 500K mark and not be picking from really compromised premiums. Because if you've left yourself three trades for the remaining 6 weeks and then next week you've got to fix an injury, there's no way you want to be using one of those trades just to downgrade sort of Lockie Young type or a Jackson Hatley, someone who's just sitting on your bench and you just need to grab the cash all so that you can just afford a commensurate premium to replace them with. If you took Hearn and then it's fine if you take Hearn and Hearn gets injured because his price is up there, but you know, you take Hearn and one of your lower price players like a Zach Merritt gets injured with a low score and his price drops down to 450, then you're stuck with picking, you know, some pretty unenvious midfielders at that point. You'd rather have sort of, you know, even if it's 50K, whatever, sitting in the bank that helps you just get back up into the true premium range. And so for that fear of that situation happening always leads me to still go for the value pick, even when it's something like this, like my 22nd upgrade in the team. You know, I think that there's quite a few questions, as you said, that we've got, being Sicily versus Hearn. How about in this situation and this situation? I think across the board, I'm just going to say Sicily. He's great value. He's shown from the last week that if they're going to stick with him in the back line, he's got great scoring potential. I think you sort of just have to let Hearn go at this point.
I think I'm actually going to go counter to that. I think his scoring potential is just so much higher. He's averaging 110 compared to 97. That I think I'd take the 15 points over the last seven rounds, and that's still like 85 points, like half a trade sort of worth of value. Dunny, I think we'll use you as the tiebreaker in that situation then. If you have Hearn or Sicily as your final defensive upgrade, who would you pick, mate?
It's a really tough call. I think it's really close. It's not a decision for me because I've already got both of them. But I think I do like West Coast's run home. I think it's really good. Hearn does get a lot of those kickouts. Sicily has that risk of being put up forward again by Clarko, which is a real concern. But I think I'm going to have to go with Faz and stick with the value pick there of Sicily. I think he's probably got a bigger ceiling. He can go a 140 like he did this week. Hopefully Clarko's learned his lesson and doesn't try him forward again because that clearly didn't work. But don't get me wrong, I do love Shannon Hearn. I brought him in just after his bye and he's been a great pickup for me as well. So as we're getting closer to the end of the year, I mean, you say 15 points a game, 80 points. I think
100K is better potentially.
I think the 100K, yeah, is a lot better in your hands. And
awesome. All right, let's go to some rookies now. We're going to cover these fairly quickly because not too many people will be looking at downgrades. And if you are, basically just got to take whichever dud is available. or hopefully not dud. The first question we got about rookies was from @Trouter87 asking about downgrade options in the back line. And the good news there was we had two debutants and they both scored reasonably well. We had Quaynor for Collingwood finally on debut. We've been tracking him since the preseason. He's a first rounder, so his price tag's 153K, but he scored 82. A little bit frustrated that he's not available next year for peanuts now, but that's okay. At this stage of the season, as a downgrade target, I think ideally you'd prefer not to pay that amount, which makes the second option a fair bit more attractive, and that's Derek, I don't know how to say the last name, but he's going to be Egg Boy now, Derek Eggy Boy Smith, 102K. He scored 77 on debut for Richmond. You would assume he's out pretty soon. So if you see Quaynor as having better job security and you are facing duds on your backline bench, then that may be a reason to shell out the extra cash. But those are your two options there. In the midfield, we had Carl Dunkley on debut for Melbourne, the brother of our beloved Josh. 102K is his price tag. He has scored 58 on debut. And then in the forward line, we got a question from Joshua James Spina on Facebook asking about Ollie Hanrahan and whether or not he's a good downgrade option. He scored 85 and is priced 124K. So I think if you're looking at the downgrade in the midfield or forward line, you had two options that played on the weekend. so those are your picks. And then in the back line, you've got a more expensive player and a cheaper player. So it almost picks itself depending on what you need your downgrade for. Any comments to add, Faz?
I think that Carl Dunkley had some pretty huge raps on him after going undrafted last year and being picked up in the mid-year draft. There's obviously a few listeners hoping that he doesn't hold his spot and Oscar Baker can force his way back into the team. But I think with those sort of raps, he probably gets the nod for the remainder of the season. And Hanrahan also don't know a lot about, but you know, Hawks have looked pretty good. They got the win on the week, so it probably buys him a week or two of job security there.
Right, next question is from Roger Brooks, one of our patrons. He's asking what to do with Jerry Cameron. A lot of us brought him in prior to the Gold Coast game. He scored 109 for Gold Coast, and then he scored 70, 54, 77, and 64 in the following 4 weeks. So definitely not up to scratch. Is it worth sticking with him or looking elsewhere? And unfortunately, when you look at his next three opponents, they've got Richmond, Collingwood, Port Adelaide. So all potential danger games there. I'm a little bit worried. And at 400K, you don't really want to trade him out, but it's not the end of the world if he's going to score 60s for the next 3 weeks. Donnie, what do you reckon, mate?
He falls into that category of key forwards that I just do not like bringing into my side. And I think we've seen that with just the variation in scoring that he can have. I'd probably throw in the towel on him. I would have had enough of those sorts of scores by now. If you're going to ditch him, this would be the time.
Oh, but you're forgetting, Donny, that 163 you just mentioned came in round three against Richmond. So I'd say he's a
shoo-in. Well, that is true. So can he back it up and do it again? I don't know.
I think I'm the wrong person to ask here. With four trades left, I don't think I have a choice. I've got to stick it out with Jezza. Just I might get a tattoo over the offseason reminding myself that key forwards are a stupid idea. And
if you had 7 or 8 trades left, what would you be doing with him then?
If I had 7, 8, 9 trades, I'd prefer to trade in a 7th forward and loophole.
Oh, yeah, that's actually – Jez is a good option for the loophole, I think, because he just has that huge fluctuation in his scoring and is a prime option.
I mean, you even loophole Jared Cameron. You would have beat the other Jay Cameron by 20 points this week. So those are your loophole options, team. Jay Cameron with Jay Cameron. All right, let's go to overrated, underrated. This one's from at Crilly10. Is Mundy a viable F6 option for the run home? Talked about him last week being an absolute bargain buy. Didn't actually see how he went on the weekend. Hopefully scored okay. 84, so not brilliant. It has now been 6 rounds since he hit the ton, but before that, he had a 4-round patch of 122, 137, 112, and 141. It's been a season of hot and cold for Mundy, and I feel like at some stages I've overrated, other stages I've underrated him, and now I don't know where exactly I'm at with David Mundy. Faz, what do you reckon?
This is a pretty easy overrated for me. Got to show some love for the fellow gingers out there, but I think Mundy's days of being a Supercoach player are behind him. With 6 scores above 100 for the season, really just not somebody that I'm considering. I think that there's enough options in the forward line this year that you'll be a fair way off the mark if Mundy's your upgrade at this point in the season. Obviously, circumstances mean that sometimes you have to take these compromised options, but if you can avoid it, I would not be trading Mundy in.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there, mate. Having said that, though, you could sideswap Jeremy Cameron pretty much straight to him. Their prices are pretty similar there. But no, I agree. I think he did have that awesome run in the middle of the year where a lot of us were thinking, geez, why have we not got this guy on our side? But yeah, since round 10, hasn't cracked the ton. And his run home doesn't look overly great with Sydney, Geelong, and then Port Adelaide away thrown in there amongst some others as well. So I think he's an overrated guy at the moment, just based on what he did mid-season.
I think I still have him as appropriately rated for his price tag. 421K, you can't go too far wrong with that. At worst, he sort of just breaks even, but I've probably overrated him in the past. All right, let's go to the captaincy options to finish up this week's episode. As per usual, I've done a little bit of research, so I'm going to kick off and then throw to you, gents. For the vice captaincy options, I've got at number 3, Luke Parker. So agree with your comments before about probably taking Kennedy over Parker, Faz, but if you have him, he's a good vice captaincy option just because of his upside associated to his goal scoring nous. His last 3 against Carlton, 119, 125, and 90, and he's certainly in good form at the moment. So if he carries that in against Carlton, that could be a good one. And then Hearn, I've actually got as my 2nd option for the vice-captaincy. His record against Collingwood, his last 3 games against them, 149, 110, 109. And let me tell you, as somebody who does some research for captaincy fairly often, it's hard to find a backline option or even Shannon Hearn averaging sort of that well against any opposition consistently. So the fact that he's done that for the last three is pretty damn good. I'd be pretty keen to take a punt on him. But the number one option for the week for vice captaincy, Grundy against West Coast this week, I think. Obviously, they've got Nick Nat back, but surely he's still not playing heavy minutes at this stage. 132 was his score against West Coast earlier on in the season. So I think I'll run the dice with him. For a captaincy backup, I've got four pretty good options, I think. Three come from the Melbourne Bulldogs game, and they are Clayton Oliver against the Dogs coming in as my fourth pick. Last year, he scored 125 and 136 against the Dogs, so certainly likes to play him and is in good form at the moment, as we talked about earlier on in the show. Next best is Bontempelli. It's pretty close between him and Oliver, but I gave Bont the slight edge because Ollie has had a 50, whereas Bont's basement has been a little bit higher than that this year. Against Melbourne, he scored 128 last year against them. And for the second top captaincy option that I've got, it's McRae against Melbourne. 105 and 131 were his two scores against them last year. And as a captaincy option, there's nobody as consistent as McRae. And then the top captaincy option that I've got is Neil against Port Adelaide. He has a good run against them previously, but importantly, he's already played them once this year in round three, and he scored 177 against Port the last time they played, which you may or may not remember, Dunny. So Grundy and Neil.
No, don't recall that one.
Grundy and Neil will be my pick. Faz, how about you?
I did listen to your advice last week and not to Mark's. I didn't have him and was feeling very nervous until Lachie Neale banged out a good score in the last game. So, yeah, I think that, that just looks like a pretty set-and-forget one there with Brody Grundy wearing the V and Lachie Neale with the C.
Marcus, in your research there, what did it tell us about Nat Fyfe against Hawthorn?
So Nat's not really enjoyed playing Hawthorn too much, but part of that could just be Hawthorn over the last few years has been a more dominant club. He last played them in 2017 where he scored a 93. Yeah, he just didn't stand out too much stats-wise. And then his form as well recently after scoring 76 against West Coast when they got fairly thoroughly beaten was another reason why I dropped him down a little bit. But I don't think you could go too far wrong with Fyfe.
No, I think if you could certainly chuck the VC on him, that's for sure. I wouldn't go as a straight captain for him. And probably the only other one is a bit of a dice roll as to which player to pick. But the Adelaide midfield against Gold Coast, you'd have to think that Shear would go to one of the Crouch boys or Rory Sloane. If you could pick one of the ones that he doesn't go to, you might end up with a decent score out of one of those guys as well. But Lachie Neale may be coming into my side this week, and I may just have to field him against Port at Adelaide Oval. So, thankfully, I can't actually make the game this week, so I won't have to watch him tear us apart if that's what happens. But we'll see how we go.
All right. Well, that wraps up this week's podcast. Thanks, gents, for coming on. And we're still getting a fair heap of questions coming on late in the piece. So to all our listeners that are still listening to us, just want to say thank you. We've had a few patrons drop off across the season. That's perfectly okay and the normal. But we've also had a few join on in the last month. So thank you to any new patrons as well. As per usual this season, Faz and I will be nicking off to record a quick bonus episode for those Patreon listeners as well. So just want to say thank you for everyone for still hanging on. And I think sort of community-wise, this has been our toughest year results-wise out of the last 11 years. So thank you for staying true to us through that as well. It is much appreciated. Dunny, any final words to add on this week's potty, mate?
To echo your thoughts there, mate, thanks everyone for still listening in. I agree, it's been probably one of the hardest seasons we've had for a long time, but stick with it, everyone. We've got 7 weeks to go, so only three more games till finals for you league players, so make sure you make that top eight and hopefully bring home some glory and bragging rights with your mates.
Faz?
Yep, you two have said it perfectly. Thanks to the listeners and the Patreons out there, and just stick it out. We've got Seven weeks, still a long time in Supercoach. So just keep plodding away and let's see what we can do.
Mm-hmm. All right, and with that, we'll sign off for another week. See ya.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Let's get crazy.